right, so let's make it plain. Welcome back to the Make It Plain Wayne podcast, Elevated Friendship. How do you feel about all this going on? Now, I'm going to tell you how I feel, but how do you feel? Let's make it plain.
All right. So coffee and more coffee, please. Delicious. All right. So, for today, I want to get into, three topics, really. I want to talk about the NRA and do something that I, didn't really think I was going to do. And it's because of how I'm going to approach this, that I can say the things that I'm going to say. Number one, I want to talk about, the NRA. And then I do also want to talk about, just our family structures, like parenting, the parenting structure and how we expect, things out of our kids that we might not be doing right now, or that we didn't achieve in our youth or teenage years. Last but not least, I want to talk about an experience I had just nonchalantly, casually, looking over into a volleyball tournament today. Let's get into it. Let's talk. And let's make it plain. So, with most of these news stories, the number one thing that I'm always stuck on, the number one thing that I always want to put out in the universe is, no matter what shooting happens or what black male or black female has been wronged, especially with celebrities, no matter what is going on in these days and age, there's people trying to pick their face up off the ground. There's families trying to figure out, like, how are we going to live now? You know what I mean? How are we going to function? How are we going to, pay our bills, or how are we even going to get from day to day when our routine included this person, And I mean, we have many, many, many scenarios that we see in the news, that we see, that we see, all over the world. And I think it's just so casual. It's so easy. And it's so normal to just bounce from subject to subject. Me, I don't bounce. As you can see with where I'm going here, I'm not really a bounce and on to the next story kind of guy. Like, I mean, just think, if somebody came and fired you from your job today, like, you're drinking your coffee, you get to work, and everybody's gone. Like, everybody gets let go. You don't care what's in the news tomorrow, because you got to find a way to put food on the table, or figure out how, you're going to rebound from this moment. So you don't care what happens in the news today, even though the big major story might be XYZ company lays off all of its, East Coast or West Coast or Midwest or whatever people. And like, I've seen it happen where, things that happen to companies, or things that happen to, like a Toyota recall. I remember that happened, and I was in the rental car world, and they kindly asked us to curb and park all of our, Toyota vehicles, and they came and switched out for newer, better ones. So, it's one thing when it's like an easy fix, but it's another when it's trauma, when it's 9/11, when it's, a bus or a plane or, something so bad, so harsh that, like, you say it, man, I wouldn't trade places with that person. The last thing I want to do is trade places with that person. Or, man, it, like, not like a sucks to be them kind of thing, but you're just like, man, I really wouldn't want to be going through what they're going through, or I can only imagine what they're going through right now. Like, yeah, you could only imagine it, but you don't want to. And that's all I'm saying is I want to give these families time to grieve. I want to give these people time to grieve. When it involves children, when it involves guns, when it involves, you know, some type of racial imbalance, or, you know, I think the tough hot topic is usually the police, because I mean, maybe I'm alone in this, but I have police in my family. I have police friends, you know, so it's like I never quite understood the Blue Lives Matter thing, because I'm like, well, they're the police, like we look up to them or we respect them and all that. So I was like, I don't understand their need for support when they literally are the law. Like, I haven't seen like a Law Lives Matter, you know, support or anything. Like, it's just like, well, whether you like them or not, they're still going to do their job. If you don't like, you know, if you don't like a certain, you know, food or restaurant, you won't go there. Their business suffers. It doesn't work like that for the police. They're still going to pull you over. So like, I never really understood that, you know, because like we could have like a Judge Lives Matter and it still wouldn't matter. Like, they're still going to come to work and do their jobs. You know, and it's their job to protect and serve. And if they're not protecting, they're not serving, then, you know, somebody steps up to try to help, which is like it's kind of a tough thing. But back to what I'm saying. The reason why I can come and talk about this is I'm not talking about any specific incident when it comes to the NRA. I think, and this is just me one-on-one talking to people, I think that the NRA could be a good thing if you turn it around in the favor of the people that need protecting, right? So one of the things about soldiers, one of the things about warriors is a soldier, a warrior does not need a specific type of weapon to be a soldier or a warrior. It's in their mindset. They could survive with minimal things. And everyone knows this. Anyone that is a warrior or a soldier or a martial artist or any kind of fighter, really, all you need is to put your 2 points up and you go at it. Right. And I'm a pretty boy, so I really can't get messed up. So I have to know how to end the fights quickly, you know. So that's all I'm saying. Why can't we turn it into good favor? And this is what I mean. Let me cut to it. There's no way. OK, like I watched the movie American Sniper. Like, I think right after I got married, me and my wife, we go to the movies every Friday. And I didn't know nothing about that world. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know anything about snipers. I didn't know anything about the Army, the Marines, none of that. I just know the people that go in, the people I love and whatever. You know, I don't know anything about that world. So when I saw that movie, I'm just like, what? What is going on here? Like, wow. And I mean, it was amazing. You know what I'm saying? But like, let me ask you the question though. Okay. Cause for those of you who haven't seen the movie, I won't spoil the movie, but let's just say that gentleman was now retired and he was able to walk freely through a high school or sit randomly anywhere he wanted in the high school and protect the school or be there or be available for those random terror type situations, he would know what to do. And that's what I'm saying. Like, when there's doors locked and whomever is in the school knows the layout of the school. I feel that you need someone that can respond with the right type of force and tactical precision. So you can't afford, this is the hard part, you can't afford what that man or that woman would charge. So that's why I'm asking, you know, people that love the NRA, that love this, that love that, what can we do to protect and you know, protect and help our communities better? You know what I'm saying? Like, instead of going out and fighting for your rights and fighting for this, just go in and fight for the people that need the most help. You know, when it's a high school or a college or a movie theater or whatever, you know, now we're on the same page we were on of 9/11, where now if there's an air marshal on every flight or whatever, you know, we don't have to know who they are. We don't have to know what's going on. We just know, oh, wow, can handle themselves and, you know, carefully or with the right amount of force, handle us and take care of us. So that's all I'm saying is instead of having to defend your guns being taken away as a whole organization and amendments and all of that, why not find a way to actively be in, you know, these areas of our society as more of just a loud voice or a hashtag or a bumper sticker to attack, you know, the people that you feel are, you know, destroying the country. Now, if I'm wrong, here's the thing. If I'm wrong and these types of things are being implemented and then shot down or not agreed upon or bipartisan or however you want to say it, then yeah, that's just a shame on everybody. You know, because like, no, I don't want rifles and guns at every cafe and every daycare. You know, I don't, but I think we're at a point where we should realize that like the mental health of our young men is something that has not been cared for. It's something that has not been worked on, and it keeps being a consistent type of person. So I mean, I can easily say that you're looking at black males, white males. So why is this such a problem? Why are we, you know, so quick to grab a gun instead of sitting down and talking? I don't know. Is a therapist the answer? Is sports the answer? Is a video game the answer? Was church not enough? What was in the diet? You know, there's so many questions, you know, so many questions to ask, but that's just all I wanted to say about that is I really feel like maybe instead of arguments, we need better implementation, better methods, because we do have areas where this is not happening and then areas where this continues to happen. So it's like, you know, at some point people start to try to find ways to limit those things. And like, no, I don't want metal detectors in all of these places where we think that more children will be. But if it's going to keep people safe in elementary schools, in high schools, in junior highs, and movie theaters, and all these, you know, random places, airports, you know, the 9/11s and, you know, the buses and the trams and all that, then maybe it is necessary. Maybe it's time we know where the guns are in every large populated area, you know? So that's all I wanted to say about that. Maybe instead of arguments, we implement better. Now on to family, right? On to family. Like, this is the thing that really messed me up. I was just sitting thinking, I was like, do I have the focus and the dedication to see that my daughter surpasses me in something that maybe I didn't do well, right? I really didn't do well in algebra. how am I going to get my child to perform better than my B or C average in algebra classes in high school, right? How do I teach her the focus? How do I teach her the strategy, or how to collaborate with the right people to ultimately do what I did not do, which was get an A plus in each algebra class, right? Now, you could say that it's in the roots, you know, it's in the beginning, and it's how we structure and how we, the kindergarten and the preschools and all that. You can say that it's that, but what am I doing now that was different than what I got as a kid, right? And you can talk to your parents. You can talk to your parents if they're still here, if you can still reach out to them, or if you're on good terms. You can reach out to them and ask, hey, what was I doing in preschool? What was I doing in kindergarten? Or even if you were in preschool or in kindergarten, you can sit around and ask. Like, that's a good way to get it started. But it actually should be. It should be kind of a ladder of success that each generation finds a way to outdo and perform better than the previous generation. And each generation is better financially. Each generation is better academically. Each generation is better spiritually. Each generation is better health-wise, right? So that's the thing. Like, if I'm one of the people on my 600-pound life, how can I expect my child to, you know, go through high school and college, get an academic scholarship, have a six-pack, and all these things, right? So it's like, it really is a very revealing and almost embarrassing moment when you're sitting there trying to point at your kid and yell at them to do something that you didn't know how to do. So as my friend and my old boss Sarah put it, are you going to inspect what you expect, right? I go downstairs, I'm hungry, I want to eat my meal. My meal prep, what did I make? Salmon, jasmine rice, mixed vegetables. Well, let me go see if it's still down there. There should be salmon, mixed vegetables, and some jasmine rice. Okay, well, that's what I expect to be down there. So let me go look. Okay, well, my daughter didn't steal it. She's too small to know what it is. She can't reach. My wife didn't steal it. Okay, cool. Well, if I put in the work, then there's nothing to worry about, right? But if I haven't put in the work and I just want things, right? Well, what am I going to do to get it there, right? How am I going to fulfill that expectation without doing what's necessary to get it? How am I going to fulfill that expectation without doing what's necessary to get it? I want to go to the NBA. But I can't make free throws. I want a full ride scholarship to Duke or USC or Notre Dame or North Dakota State. You know, I want a full ride scholarship to these random places. But I can barely get past a B average, and I'm not a very good writer. Like, I haven't, you know, written any good notes, or, you know, I don't know how to, you know, write, you know, good letters to get myself accepted. So it's like, well, what are you willing to do to reach those goals? It's not always about hard work. It's not always about determination. Sometimes it really is about the ingredients in your story. So it's like my favorite thing is getting my wife's order right, like for her food, you know, because there's been so many times I just messed it up. So she's going to inspect what she expects the second I get home. So I get home and I got that sandwich or that soup or that meal. And she's like, babe, I didn't want onions. Or, babe, I did want cucumbers on this. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even check. I was just trying to get home. So at that moment, she's going to hit me up and check me to inspect what she expects. Because the expectation came from the order. You know, the order, The order was whatchamacallit, Chick-fil-A, the chicken sandwich with pickles and that nasty mayonnaise with a sweet tea. And I'm like, all right, I'll get it. And that's why I forget. You have to expect what you have to inspect what you expect. She orders things that I wouldn't eat. So mentally, I just drop them off my mind. So I'm just like, ew. I'm like a kid. Ew. So yeah, it is so much easier to drop things that aren't a part of you. To drop things and not be focused on things that aren't a part of you. So how do you make it a part of you? You have to speak that language. You have to put it in your language. So I'm sitting and just thinking, I'm like, wow, like I remember the things that I struggled with in school and I remember the things I loved. Now, when it comes to writing papers, reading, you know, books and the retention part and, you know, speaking and saying what you want to say, got it. Got it. Geometry, got it. Art, got it. History, got it. Even though at first I was like really thrown off by history because I was like, why are we going to study people? Got it. Now, when it came to algebra, and this is why I did not venture into the world of trigonometry or AP chemistry or AP algebra. Chemistry was fun. Science was fun. And the more I got into it, it was even more fun. You know, that could have been a great passion of mine as well. But boy, how am I going to tell her what she needs to do in algebra when the time comes? Unless I do the work and we set her up in programs or with learning tools to make sure that she has that strong rooting and that firm work. You know, so she can have what we didn't have. It's like literally growing up and finding out that, man, when I was 8 years old, I fell off a bike and flipped over the handles. When dad was 8 years old, he fell off the bike and flipped over the handles. When grandpa was 8 years old, he fell off the bike and flipped over the handles. Well, maybe at 8 years old, we stay in the house with my daughter or son, however you play into this story. Maybe at 8 years old, we do a little something different. Maybe you drive a little slower. Maybe you find out what kind of, you know, terrain they were on. Maybe they hit a speed bump. Maybe they hit a dip in the ground. I don't know. But at 8 years old, you got to figure it out. Maybe they hit a growth spurt. And they're or maybe they have their growth plates and their knees aren't even. So you got to go and, you know, at that point, find out, like, what is it that's in our family history that we just start doing so different or so wild? So, yeah, that's kind of my piece on family and expectations. We have to inspect what we expect. And, yeah, I mean, how can you expect a member of your family to be a rocket scientist when, I mean, you have to tell them about 8 or 9 times how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, it's like, maybe this isn't for us. So then if you have that fear and you know what's in your family or what's going on with your family, you jump out early and try to catch on to those things, right? All right. Well, hey, last but not least, I did want to, you know, reenact a volleyball story that I had. And this was just something that I saw, you know, just at the gym, just working out, just having a good time. You know, you always notice when there's a whole bunch of cars in the parking lot. And so I'm like, and the gym I go to is a community gym. It's not a YMCA, but it has the same effect, but larger. And so I'm like, I kind of see 2 baseball teams out there. And I'm like, okay, 2 baseball teams and a parking lot full of cars. I'm like, nah, it must be some kind of basketball tournament going on. And I'm forgetting, basketball is like, I don't know, unless you're NBA,
you know, NBA goes, yeah, forever, you know, from what, November all the way to June, the end of June, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June, 8 months. So does summer, so does track. Track ends about the same time, like professional track. College track ends in May, or June. College track ends in June, just end in June. High school track ends that mid-May, or the end, or the beginning of June, whichever state you're in. But I go in and I see, I'm like, oh, volleyball. And I'm just going to tell you what I saw. Not trying to nitpick, not trying to be mean or anything, but I saw so many different types of teams. And I know all of these schools, right? And I had a new found appreciation for volleyball that I thought was there before. But as I'm walking around this tournament, I can see the different levels of knowledge of the game, the different levels of intensity in the game. Some girls a little bit older, a little bit more, you know, aggressive. Some girls a little bit more new, don't really know how to fire up those reactors, you know, and go after the ball. I saw, you know, like hood teams there. I saw, you know, mixture, you know, of different, you know, social ladder. You know, I saw very preppy teams. I saw very suburban teams. You know, you got like your military neighborhoods and all that stuff. So the thing that blew me away about this interaction was just, this was my big takeaway. I started to realize, wow, every team or every scenario really comes down to two things, the coach and the athlete, right? Now, if you got a coach that has a knowledge and they can implement that system well, now it's all on the athlete. So, you know, on the athlete's perspective, the athlete's got to have, you know, ability. And then the athlete's got to be able to, you know, have a mindset that says win, not drama, not my girlfriend broke up with me, you know, which happens. Like, a lot of people don't realize. That's why the first thing they told me in college was, you don't date girls on the track team. Mindset is a huge thing. We fail it a lot, especially as young men. I know a lot of girls like to think boys are all dogs, but those boys with hearts, they get destroyed by stuff like this. Some of them wouldn't want to take football scholarships because they want to go to the same school as their girlfriend. But you're on one side or the other. You're either the coach or the athlete. And if you're that coach that doesn't have much of a knowledge, you try. And if you're that coach that doesn't really connect well with your kids, you can't implement very well, it's tough. It's hard because you're just sitting there like, God, I know this sport and I know this and I know that. And I've seen it with older coaches. The older coaches have the knowledge, they have the wisdom, but they've lost that connection with the kids because as they're getting older, the kids are still in the same bubble of time where everything that you knew was now outdated. And the way you used to train is not the way that you need to train now, because we can train smarter. But then, yeah, then it's on, you know, the athlete. Now, if the athlete has the ability, right? And then the athlete has the right mindset, there's nothing you can do to stop them. There really is nothing you can do to stop them. Because they might not need the coach at that moment. You know, they really might not. And that's what I'm learning now, is the difference between a, you know, a team that wins the track meet and one guy that wins the 100 meter dash, right? Because one guy winning the 100 meter dash, that shows that you were quality in that event, either as an athlete or a coach in that event. That's good. That's great. That's awesome. Having a hood kid, and that's everybody's got some chocolate somewhere in their state. Having a hood kid that's really good in the 100 meters, not so impressive. I mean, the time is impressive, but that's not as impressive as having 100, 200, 400, pole vault, shot put, discus, mile, 2 mile, 4x8, 4x4, 4x1, hurdles, long jump, triple jump, high jump, presence, shot put, presence. Like when you can show up in each event and you don't have to win it, you just show up and you're consistent. That shows that that coach was about something real. And this year, I had the chance to be a part of that team. We almost won. We were running a runner-up. But I got my boys across the line. First, fourth, and eighth. Which is like, I've never seen a team like this or been a part of a team like this as a coach or an athlete in high school. So being able to see these guys walk across, you know, the field and have this huge accolade that I did not have, I'm teaching them to do what I did and go further than what I did as an athlete, but now they're going further than I did as a team. Like, that's beautiful. So, ooh, it's raining. But you all, that really stuck with me, just seeing how the difference in teams really differs. You know, the real difference is the coach's knowledge or the coach's ability to connect with the kids and implement that structure, or it's the athlete's ability to apply a mindset that's winning, right? So it's either or. It's either the coach or the athlete or a combination of the two. So, all right, you all. So we talked about the NRA. We talked about, parenting and inspecting what you expect. And we also talked about a little bit about volleyball and how much of an amazing sport it is, how intense it is, how wild it is. And it's not just Nebraska and Texas. It's everywhere. So let's show some more love to the volleyball world. They're amazing. They're awesome. They need so much more love and awesome. And it's so much more than just sand volleyball and bikini volleyball. Like it's amazing everywhere. But hey, represent, because that Walsh, I think was her name. She did awesome. Represent it. So yeah, boy, it's raining hard. All right, you all. I love you all. Hope you love me back. I'll see you soon.